This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Liz Palmer, she's a member of the Albemarle County,
I get it so confused, Liz.
I'm so sorry. The Albemarle County Service Authority Board of Directors. Remind us first who and what that is.
Okay.
And thank you for being here.
Okay. Thank you for asking me to come here. The Albemarle County Surface Authority is the retailer for water and sewer services in the county. And the Ravana Water and Sewer Authority is the wholesaler. They have two customers, and that's the city and the county.
So the Ravana makes the water, and then the Surface Authority is sort of the middleman that sort of figures out, takes it from Ravana, distributes it, handles all the paperwork, and sells that public water then to the ratepayers, people like me who are on public water.
Right. They maintain the secondary lines. What the Ravana Water and Sewer Authority does is they collect the raw water, treat it, and put it out on the major lines, and then the Albemarle County Service Authority and the City Public Works Department take it from there.
Okay.
The Ravana Water and Sewer Authority very quickly was formed in order to for the city and the county to have one.
A joint water supply. Both could support and invest in.
And they both sit, both the board of the Ravana Water Authority is made up of members of the city and the county.
We're talking with Liz Palmer, and the phone lines are open 977-1070. So let me ask you this. After all the stuff that has come, we've talked about this on this program many times, all the information that has been brought to light by opponents of the plan and supporters of the plan that have called it into question, this study, that study, expensive demand analysis, all this kind of stuff. You remain a diehard supporter of the water supply plan, the 50-year water supply plan, which, you know, three city councilors have come forward and said, you know, if I'd known now what I knew then, I wouldn't be supporting this plan. But you continue to support it. Why is that? What is it about the plan that when you review everything and you look at both sides and both sides of the argument, you still continue to say, you know, this is a good plan?
First of all, there's an awful lot of misinformation out there. I have not seen a study yet that would make me not support the plan. I originally supported the plan because it is the most environmentally sound plan. It puts the most water back in the streams. And that has been my major portion of the support in this. But it also takes into consideration the aging infrastructure in our system, which actually is what brought me into this whole thing about 12 years ago.
And what do you mean by that?
When I first moved here, the first thing that I came in contact with actually was the Ragged Mountain Sugar Hollow system. And I was quite frankly pretty horrified when I saw the condition of it. We have this wonderful community with this wonderful university and all these smart people, and I just couldn't quite understand why we were operating the system the way we were operating it. It's been a long haul over the last 12 years, but this is a plan that really takes care of our rivers, really takes care of our infrastructure, and sets us up for protecting our watershed for the next generation.
We're talking with Liz Palmer. 977-1070 is the phone number if you want to join this conversation. What is it about the existing infrastructure that you found so glaringly at odds with the smart community, with the university?
Well, first of all, the Sugar Hollow pipeline takes water from the headwaters of our watershed, the Mormons River. And the Mormons River was a wonderful place to get water in the 1920s when the pipe was put in. It doesn't have the kind of water transfer capacity for our community now. It also is too small of a river to take the water out. We know now that you should only take a certain percentage of the water out of a stream before you're going to damage it. Scientists say that number is something like 20%. The way we operate a system before was, and actually we still do now until we get the plan in, but we take the same amount out of the river every single day, except for in the summertime where we take out more. and there's lower flows in the summertime. Therefore, you are you're taking out a higher percentage. The new plan, what it's going to do is it's going to take that, get rid of that Sugar Hollow pipeline and put a pipeline in from the South Fork Ravanna Reservoir to the Ragged Mountain Reservoir. The South Fork Ravanna Reservoir is a run-of-the-river reservoir. It's a 7.5-mile-long river that drains 260 square miles of the county. Lots of water coming through there. So we can skim off at really high flows, like during the winter when we have big storms, and we can store the water over at Ragged Mountain so that in the summertime we can let the water flow over the South Fork Ravanna Dam and down the Ravanna when there's the least amount of water running through the system.
We're talking with Liz Palmer. She's a member of the Albemarle County Service Authority Board of Directors. We had Dee Dee Smith and Richard Lloyd in yesterday, and I know you heard that conversation. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about, they said this is a new study which shows that the existing dam at Ragged Mountain is in great shape, and that this is a primary talking point of supporters of the plan, such as yourself, saying this old dam needs to be replaced. It's in bad shape. But mm-hmm. they say we have a new study that shows it's in great shape and always has been.
The study, well, actually, we don't have the study yet. What we have right now is a letter from the engineers that are doing the study. Okay, and it really says that it has a variety of things in the letter, like so many things from engineers. It says that we need to increase the spillway, and we need to take the existing dirt from the face of the dam that was put up there to shore up the dam in the 1930s and take that off and replace it with concrete. That's not saying the dam is perfectly okay. They did 4 borings into it, and those 4 borings show that the interior of the dam is in better shape than we thought it was, which is, you know, great thing. The question is, though, at what cost would you repair and increase the height of this dam? There, Ravanna Water and Sewer Authority asked the last engineers to take a look at should we restore the old dam and add to it. That engineering company said that in their opinion, it was not a good use of public funds to do that because it would cost a similar amount to rehab the old dam as it would to build a new dam of the same height downstream. That old dam repaired may not have the same lifespan. It may have different maintenance issues. You're better off with a known entity if it's going to be a similar cost. That's why the Ravanna Water and Sewer Authority went ahead with the design of the new dam.
Let me ask you, we'll go to the phones in just a minute here. 977-1070 is the phone number if you have a question. We're talking with Liz Palmer. She is the supporter of the 50-year water supply plan and a member of the Albemarle County Service Authority Board of Directors. You mentioned cost. Let me ask you really quick about this idea of cost, because mm-hmm. that's always been for me the most interesting thing is sure. an Albemarle County taxpayer who's on public water. This is so incredibly expensive, building the new bathtub, the new dam, the pipeline. There's not even a real number, as I understand it, on the cost of the pipeline yet. And it seems like an incredibly expensive public works project that, according to the opponents of the plan, we just don't have the money for something like this, and the rates would go through the roof if the county and the city did move forward with this plan. What's your thoughts on that?
First of all, a couple of things about the old dam. We do need to fix the old dam. Okay, that's a given. And I will say that in that letter from the new study, there is a qualifier, as there are so many different studies and letters from engineers, but it basically says that the broadly described scenarios that will require additional development and evaluation to assess constructability and cost. Okay, so that's a kind of a broad qualifier on that. But the Ravanna Water and Sewer Authority and the Albemarle County Service Authority, and I assume the city, I'm not involved with the city public works department, have known that they were going to have to do something with this for quite a long time. And the cost of the dam, when we originally got the really inflated cost for the concrete dam a few years ago, and that was actually during the height of the construction season, the boom. Ravanna Water and Sewer Authority said, stop, we're not going to pay that. We don't think that you have given us a good design. They went and they got a group of experts to look at the situation, and then they hired Schnabel Engineer, which came back with a price for an earthen dam that was actually, if we get going on it soon while construction prices are low, would actually be less than the original cost we got on the dam when we first started this whole thing. Ravana Water and Sewer Authority has known about this for quite some time, and they have been putting money in the contingency fund for this for quite a while. So the cost of the dam, the building of the dam will not increase rates at all. And that's already been shown. The Albemarle County Service Authority has been planning for this quite a while, too, and all the infrastructure problems that they have had. And so we've been very, very carefully looking at price for quite some time.
We're talking with Liz Palmer, and the phone lines are open at 977-1070. Richard Lloyd, who was with us yesterday, is on the phone. And Richard, you're on with Liz. You go right ahead.
Good afternoon, Liz. How are you today?
Just fine.
Liz, you just mentioned, and we've differed on so many things, and I'm glad to see that you're now changing from the dam's no good to where we must repair the dam. But you just mentioned that the...
I'm sorry.
Hold on just a minute.
That's not true. That's not what I said. But anyway.
Clarify what you said.
So. What I said was that we have to fix the dam if we're not going to replace it. My opinion is that we should build a new dam because we have to enlarge the dam. Schnabel Engineering has told us that it's going to be a similar cost to build a new dam as it would to repair the old dam. And those are equal in height, though. I'm trying to make that clear.
Yeah.
But no, I don't think we should repair. I don't think we should build on the old dam. I'm just saying that we have to do something. The Department of Dam Safety is requiring us to do something.
Richard, go ahead.
I didn't know what I heard earlier, but anyway, be that as it may, Liz, you said that it wouldn't raise rates at all because we have a contingency fund. Is that contingency fund belong to, or did it come from the city, or did it come from the county? Because the people who need the excess water are going to be solely responsible, and the other party should not be responsible for having to pay for the increase in capacity.
Okay, so the money that I'm not sure what Ravana actually is calling, if they're calling it a contingency fund or not, but it is a fund that they have set aside to pay for aging infrastructure. We will have a cost allocation agreement between the city and the county when we have a plan that everybody agrees on. The city has said that they want about 1% of the new capacity. So 99% of that new capacity is going to the county. And so the county will pay for 99% of the new capacity. Some of this is being put in the aging infrastructure category. So the city will pay a percentage of the aging infrastructure costs for the, you know, that's considered rehab. About somewhere in the 60% of the total water supply plan, which includes rehabbing water treatment plants, replacing pipes, replacing pumps, all sorts of things, is in the maintenance or replacing of aging infrastructure. Unfortunately, this community really did not take care of their infrastructure on a regular basis like they should have. And they're not alone. There's been lots of communities in the United States that have done the same thing. But now we're playing catch up. Unfortunately, we're paying catch up at a time when the prices are higher, I mean, than they would have been, for instance, had we continually taken care of our infrastructure.
Richard, thank you for the call. We got a line open at 977-1070. We're talking with Liz Palmer about the water supply plan. She is a member of the Albemarle County Service Authority Board of Directors. Liz, we have a review of the demand analysis that will be coming in today, I believe, this week. What are your thoughts on that? Because the critics of the plan have said that the demand analysis is just completely wrong. It's way off. The numbers are wrong. And that this is what's driving, you know, this is what's telling you how much water you need. So it's driving the design of this plan. And they're saying we're not using as much water as the plan says that we would need. So we need to do a new demand analysis and take a fresh look at these numbers.
Okay, so the demand analysis that we have done is guided by There are state agencies that guide it. We have to go by American Water Works standards, and there's a civil engineering handbook also that gives us direction in doing a demand analysis. And then when it's all over with, the DEQ, the Department of Environmental Quality in Virginia, will look at that and sort of do a reality check, okay? And what you do when you're trying to figure out how much water you're going to use in 50 years, and you want to see, am I even close? What the DEQ does is they give you categories. You should have so much water set aside for public use, which would be schools and hospitals and fire protection and all that sort of thing. You should have a certain amount set aside, range set aside for domestic use. You should have some for commercial, industry, and leakage, because every system is going to have some leakage. And they, depending on what your community is like let's say you have a big manufacturing plant or something like that. A good example is Warrington that has the White House apple production, applesauce company. So when you add up all those different segments, you come out with a range. The DEQ says you should be somewhere between 85 gallons per person per day and about 200 gallons per person per day. The county is planning for 93 gallons per person per day, and the city is planning for 108. So you can see that when you look at that range, we're really down on the low end. There are reasons for us being down on the low end, one of which is that we really don't have any industry in this area. And when we looked at our historic use, the industrial use is just taking a nosedive.
Yeah.
So we don't really have anything set aside so much for that. I think with the county trying to bring new business in, they're trying to promote agriculture, there are businesses that might be water users that will come here in the future. And, you know, there's beer bottling companies and beer producers and whatnot. So we have to
plan for that possibility.
You have to plan for these possibilities.
Let's go back to the phones. Howard is with us. Howard, thanks for your patience. Real quick, you go right ahead.
So, Liz, I was just wondering, does anybody have any idea how much the pipeline is going to cost to build and to operate, including acquisitions or easements?
We have money set aside. We have a capital improvements plan that has estimates. But because the pipeline is not in the next five-year estimate, I mean, next five-year CIP, we don't have exact because we haven't done the engineering. But we have had engineers look at this and say it's not going to be that difficult. And you have to remember that the Sugar Hollow pipeline is a 13-mile pipeline going cross-country, crosses rivers, streams, etc. And the new pipeline that's planned is a 9-mile pipeline. It's going to be a larger pipeline, but it also increases efficiency because it connects our two wastewater treatment plants. And a big portion of our water supply plan is rehabbing and upgrading and increasing the capacity of our water treatment plants. So, you know, I call this the shorter, smarter pipe. It is estimated that it would be of similar price to replacing the Sugar Hollow pipeline, which breaks and is just in not good condition.
Howard, thank you for the call. Let's go quick to Jim on, Jim on line one. Jim, you're on with Liz Palmer. Real quick, you go right ahead.
Okay, here I am. Liz just answered one of the questions I had, and that was the issue of the cost comparison between the replacement of the Sugar Hollow pipe, which is inevitable if we were to continue to tap that supply for water and the new pipeline. But I have another question. I understand that the Virginia Waters Protection Permit we have now has staged changes in how much water we have to release to the rivers. And I'm just wondering, how easy would it be to change that? I mean, the Department of Environmental Quality of the state has established standards for how we treat our rivers. Both the Rivanna River and the Mormons River are impacted by our current system in very adverse ways. We pull a lot of water out of the Rivanna at times of low flow, and it's my understanding that the approved plan will actually be quite healing for the Rivanna because it won't require that. So my question is, what happens to the standards for water withdrawal from those two streams over time as the new plan is implemented.
Liz, I'm going to have to ask that you answer that question after we break for news.
Okay.
And it's a great question. Just stay
you.
With
that
us just a few
question.
Minutes. And Jim, thanks for the question. Jim called in with a question about state regulations on river flows. And give us your perspective on this. I know you were thinking about this during the break.
Okay, so in 2008, we got our Virginia Waters Protection Permit for the water supply plan, and this was a big deal. Prior to this permit, we had no mandatory releases below the South Fork or the Sugar Hollow Dam. We had some voluntary releases that we were using when we felt like it, and there were no real gauges to tell how much we were putting out there anyway. But the Water Protections Permit states how much water we have to leave in the river. And it has different stages of the permit for different stages of the plan as we implement the plan over the next 10 to 15 years. The permit is a 15-year permit. We're 2 years into it. One thing I would like to say is that permits are very unlikely to get less strict over time, so that when we renew it in 13 years, I would anticipate that it would be even more strict. But what happens...
More strict about river flow.
Because we're getting more science out as to how withdrawals of water affect river health. And we want to keep the rivers healthy because that keeps the water clean for people and fishing and the environment. So what the permit essentially says is that we cannot take out more than 30% of the water from the river unless we have below 86% capacity in the reservoirs, something like that.
Yeah.
And then there's different stages, and I think it would probably bore everybody if I went through all the different
stages. Again, just to underscore something you mentioned earlier in this hour, one of the reasons that you do support the 50-year water supply plan as written is because of the dealing with river flow.
It puts more water back in the rivers than we had previously. That's what this plan does. Removing the Sugar Hollow pipeline and replacing it with the South Fork to Ragged Mountain is a big deal because that relieves the headwaters of our watershed, which we've been, you know, and during summer's times, we're removing as much as 80% of the flow from that river. So you can imagine what the health is like in that river, the health of the aquatic species in that river. That's going to be completely let loose to flow naturally.
Which anybody, you know, if you go hiking up at Sugar Hollow in the summertime, as you drive up and you do those switchbacks, those little bridges across mm-hmm. the river, you see the river is just rocks. I mean, there's hardly any water in it at all.
Yeah, the 3 miles below the dam are really affected before the other creeks and rivers flow into it.
What about the river flow of the South Fork of the Ravanna below the South Fork Reservoir? What would that look like in the water supply?
That is going to get the most benefit during moderate dry times. If we have sufficient storage somewhere else, Ragged Mountain, we don't have to continually pull out of the South Fork. And so we can leave the level. Right now, we selectively draw down the South Fork every summer. Actually, we have to. We can't take much out of Ragged Mountain now because as of 2005, we were required by the Dam Safety Department to lower the level during hurricane season to 45 feet. So that's impaired right when we need it the most. We have less water in there. However, there is going to be more water left in the South Fork to flow down the Ravanna during moderately dry times, the summertime.
Let me ask you, yesterday we were talking with Dee Dee Smith and Richard Lloyd, who opposed the plan that you support, and they mentioned, they talked in detail about the history of the dam at Ragged Mountain, some 1912 letter, and mm-hmm. how the dam was redone in the 30s. And what's your perspective? Because I know you've done a lot of work yourself on the history of the existing dam at Ragged Mountain.
Well, I haven't done a lot of work, but I've done the reading. There was a few years ago some very interesting letters and papers that were found in the Special Collections Library at UVA. One was a letter that from the designer of the dam that said, basically, you didn't build it the way I designed it, so I'm not vouching for its security. The second one was a letter. We're not quite sure who that was from. I'm assuming it had somebody that had to do with the building of the dam that said, everything is safe, everything is fine, don't worry about it. And then the third was actually an 8 to 9 page long engineering report that the librarian from the Special Collections Department, her professional opinion is that that was written by John Newcomb of Newcomb Hall fame, previous president of the university.
And a dean of engineering before that. Yes.
Right. And he was a very respected engineer at the time. My understanding is that that opinion is based on the style of writing and where they found the papers. And it is considered a detailed engineering report from that time, you know. And it says some good things about the dam, and it says some bad things about the dam. One of the things that it did say was that because they had no real information on how it was built, the concern was that it was not properly moored to the underlying rock. The new report or letter that we got from Black & Veatch recently would suggest that it was properly moored, but we don't know for sure at this time. We haven't seen the whole report. The good thing that we got out of the recent study.
Dee Dee Smith said yesterday that the dam was redone in the 30s, that it was re-engineered and updated.
What happened was, I'm assuming, I'm calling this Mr. Newcomb Says, I'm going with that, but in the engineering report, he said that that because there were structural concerns with the dam and because the spillway was not large enough, he recommended that the dam what he said was, if you want to use it as designed up to the 67 feet, you should rebuild the whole thing, just start all over again. But because we didn't have a very large population at that time, he said, you really don't need that much water. So what you could do is fill it to the 45-foot mark and replace the spillway. What the community did at that time was leave the spillway alone and only fill it to the 45-foot mark. In the 30s, they said, gosh, we need more water. So what they did was they came in and they put an earthen embankment up against the dam to shore it up at that time. And then they started to fill it all the way.
So let me ask you this. At the end of the day, all the engineering aside, all the talk of pipelines and everything, what about rates? Because that, you know, at the end of the day, that's the kitchen table conversation. Is my water, I'm on public water, am I going to have to pay more if this big new plan goes forward? And the folks who aren't on public water, are their taxes going to go up to help pay for this new plan, which the opponents say could run into the hundreds of millions of dollars when all the parts are put together, the aging infrastructure, the pipeline, the new dam at Ragged Mountain, all this is done.
I wouldn't call it hundreds of millions of dollars, but anyway, first of all, rates aren't going to go up with a new dam. We've already have money set aside for that. Rates will go up as we replace infrastructure. Infrastructure is expensive. Rates have been kept low, quite frankly, at the expense of our infrastructure, and as we go forward, they will go up. What we try to do is only bring them up very as slowly as possible. We have at the Albemarle County, Service Authority, we've instituted tiered pricing. And if you notice on your very first tier for your first 3,000 gallons, we keep that at wholesale rate at the very, very lowest so that you can at least attempt to conserve and keep your rates down. As the population increases, not that I'm supporting that necessarily one way or the other, but as the population increases, more people on the system will reduce your rates. If you go to a larger city, they typically have lower rates because it's economy of scale. There's more people on the system. So it's hard to say exactly how much it will go up. The Service Authority and RWSA is not going to go out of business. The tax payers are not going to have to pick that up. It has been very prudently designed. And you take out 30-year bonds on this. Everything is bonded, so the people today are not paying the full expense of tomorrow's infrastructure. I think that is not a huge concern. But we certainly always try to keep prices as low as possible.
We're talking with Liz Palmer, and the phone lines are open at 977-1070. Linda is with us from the Ivy area. Linda, you go right ahead.
Hi, Liz.
Hi. Hi, Linda.
I'm calling to follow up with that question. Wouldn't the rates go up anyway? These rates would go up only because of the old leaky pipes.
Yeah. Yes, you're absolutely right. The biggest portion of the rate increases that we're seeing are because of aging infrastructure. And, you know, I'd like to throw one thing out there that a lot of people don't think about. When people talk about economy of scale and trying to keep rates low and being efficient, we operate two public works departments within a very short distance of one another. Why does this community have to operate two? Why can't we combine the City Public Works Department and the Alamar County Service Authority into two? I know that that makes a lot of people very upset when I say things like that. But if you really want to look at efficiency and economy of scale, you wouldn't be running two totally separate public works departments right next to one another.
Linda, thank you for the call. And Liz Palmer with the Alamar County Service Authority Board of Directors, thank you very much for coming in today. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.